Greetings and welcome to the latest edition of the Entheogenic Evolution Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Martin, and I'm happy to have you with me today. I've got a brand new interview for all of you out there in listener land. Today, I'm speaking with Juan David Alvarez in Costa Rica, talking about serving toad in Costa Rica. We had a great conversation. It was actually about a week ago now that we had the conversation, and I'm excited to bring it to you here. It's always great to get some new voices in the 5-MeO DMT Sonoran Desert Toad community to all of you out there. And Juan David is definitely a new voice. This is his first interview that he's ever done, and happy to have it here on the podcast. Before we get there, would like to make a few quick announcements. First of all, thank you to James for making your monthly contribution in support of the Entheogenic Evolution Podcast. For those of you who are regular listeners to this podcast, you've probably noticed that for really quite a few months now, it's mostly been thanking the same people because they make monthly contributions to the podcast. And, you know, I just want to put out the idea that if you're a listener of this podcast, if you enjoy the content that's available here, I would invite you to make a contribution helping to support the podcast. It does cost me money for bandwidth and storage of this podcast to make it available to you for free. Obviously, it costs me time in the sense of putting it together, doing interviews, making arrangements, reading people's books, and all of that. So I just want to invite a little bit more participation in the support area out there. Even small donations are welcome. And, you know, on rare occasion, someone stops by and drops a nice large donation, which is also appreciated. But I just would like to, you know, open up the possibility that maybe get a few more supporters of the podcast. If you would like to support the podcast, just go by my personal webpage, martinball.net. There's a PayPal link there. You can make a one-time donation, or you can sign up for a monthly contribution. And as I always mention, another way of supporting the podcast is by actually joining me over at patreon.com/martinwball and become a monthly supporter over at Patreon. And there's everything from $1 a month to $100 a month, and increasing levels of access and gifts and other things that are available there. You know, as I'm sure many of my listeners know, you know, I do have this ongoing sleep disorder. I'm not able to work a normal work life. I'm not even able to lead a normal life at this point because of this sleep disorder. This is one of the things that I've really been dedicated to continuing to do throughout all of this health crisis issue that I've been experiencing. And so a little support in return really would be awesome. Another announcement is, quite surprisingly, that I had uploaded all the audio for Entheological Paradigm 2021 edition just last week or the week before. And usually it takes several weeks or maybe even a couple months before the audiobook is available. But it got rushed right on through, and the audiobook is now available. So you can grab that at the iBookstore, at Amazon, at Audible, and it's out there along with my other audiobooks. So yay, I'm really happy about that. Also, last week I got in a great interview with Ben Holt, and turns out he's also a provider of 5-MeO DMT. I didn't even know that when we originally arranged the interview, but that'll be coming up the week after next. Of course, you know, I am alternating between interviews and selections from my memoir, Being Infinite, which we're getting close to wrapping up. But I've already had that interview. It was a great interview. Looking forward to that coming out in just a couple weeks here on the podcast. And speaking of people serving 5-MeO DMT, just wanted to put out there for anyone who's in the listening audience who either is or knows someone who facilitates 5-MeO DMT or Toad, that I'm actually trying to put together a new book project of an anthology of different people's accounts of how they facilitate 5-MeO. As you might imagine, this is somewhat inspired by recent events, and I thought it'd be a good opportunity to let people speak for themselves about how they facilitate this medicine. I've put together a little packet of information about what I'm looking for. I've already sent it to a number of individuals who I know might be interested, but there could be others out there that I don't know. So if anyone listening to this knows someone or is someone who works with 5-MeO-DMT, particularly in the context of facilitating for others. If you'd be interested in receiving information about this book project, shoot me an email at martinwball@gmail.com. And of course, I am always available for consultations, 30, 60, and 90 minutes. Check out www.nondualentheogenicintegration.com if you want more info. I think that's all the announcements that I have for right now. So let's go ahead and get into, it's a little bit of a lengthy conversation, but it's great. I think you'll enjoy it with Juan David Alvarez talking about Toad. Oh, and just one more thing that I would like to get to before we get into the interview is that I do seem to be having some kind of interesting, peculiar audio problem here on my end, where the last couple interviews that I've done, there is a crackling sound that is showing up in my audio, though it's not there during the interview, so I'm not quite sure what's making it. I haven't gotten to the bottom of it yet, but I just want to apologize that on my audio track, not the guests, but on my audio track, there's little crackling noises, and I don't know what it is, because like even now, as I'm recording this, using the exact same equipment that I used to record the interview, there's no crackling sound, so I don't know where it's coming from, and I just apologize for that audio annoyance. You know, I might have to change all my cables or something, but I just want to let you know, I know it's there, I don't know what's causing it, and you have my sincere apologies, because it's no fun to listening to just crackle, 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 but, you know, it's there. But the conversation's still great, so I hope you enjoy it. Anyway, a little disclaimer there for you. Here we go. So today for the interview, basically, you know, I just wanted to have an opportunity to get to know you, kind of hear your story.
Okay.
And then, of course, hear about you're serving the medicine and the work that you're doing. And really, we can take the conversation any direction that you want. If there's anything in particular you really want to talk about, we can talk about it. And, you know, we don't have a time limit, so we can just be casual and take our time. And, yeah, I've been excited to have you on the podcast because we've had a lot of mutual interactions now at this point with different individuals. And so I thought, let's go ahead and formalize it and let's bring Juan on the podcast and have him share his story. So here you are. So thanks so much for agreeing to being on.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for inviting me. It's an honor. Indeed it is. Thank you. Yeah. So let me go over a little bit about where it all started.
Yeah.
I came down to Costa Rica about 25 years ago. Met a young lady, in love, you know, typical story. Had kids and happy in the life. Business-wise, I was doing very successful, but I was drinking a lot, lots of drugs and crazy stuff.
What kind of business?
We had an online business. We were selling, and we still do actually own it. It's a Sun Pyramid Health. We sell natural supplements. It's based out of Nicaragua now. Due to the taxation issues here in Costa Rica, we moved it to Nicaragua. And it's basically almost just dead because we're not there. And I have a couple of employees that I think they wipe the cobwebs off, but that's about it. There's not a lot going on there anymore.
Yeah.
But it provided enough income for me to live here and my wife to accumulate quite a bit of resources. So we've done fairly well. I wound up about 30 days in the hospital because of my stupidness of drinking and drugs and whatnot. I almost killed myself. Basically, that kind of woke me up. Said, hey, you know, I'm not what I can produce, because my concept was I'm the guy, you know, I'm the man. I'm the one person who's paying for your house and your cars and my kids and the schools. And, you know, I'm the guy. It's ego, pure ego, right?
Yeah.
And, well, money can't cure ego. You know, you can't cure your sicknesses with money. So a good friend came by and said, hey, why don't you go to this ayahuasca ceremony? About a week after I'd been out of the hospital. And I said, yeah, why not? You know, what have I got to lose? I mean, I almost died. So let's go see what it's all about. So I went with him and had they asked us to just make three requests of what it is that you really want. I only chose one, which was just love. I just want to know what unconditional love is.
Yeah.
And that's all I got all night long. I got pure unconditional love. And I left that ceremony. I never drank again and never consumed pharmaceutical drugs again. Or I guess you could consider pharmaceutical drugs. It all depends on your perspective, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of where it went from there. I did about 30 plus ceremonies of ayahuasca, and I kept getting the same repetitive, everything's good. I'm happy. My life's going good. I understand. Okay. I'm physical body. I get it. I just got to be a little bit better at who I am and blah, blah, blah. It helped me a lot. Give great gratitude to it. My wife decided she wanted to buy a retreat center. And I didn't really want to, but I said, well, okay, let's go look at one. There's one for sale. Let's go look. So we went to look at this place. And the guy who was the sales agent came out and said, hey, by the way, have you guys ever done BUFO? What's BUFO?
This is the person. Well, this is the person selling you the retreat center is asking you that?
Yeah. It's the real estate agent. It's not the owner. It's the real estate.
The real estate agent. Okay. It's so funny how these connections get made. Please continue. Yeah.
So I said, no, I've never, I don't even know what it is. What is it? And he says, well, you smoke this stuff and then you just like explode into the universe. And I go, wow, that sounds pretty cool. I'll have to come back and try that. So we booked a setting and came back and came in this little guy from Mexico and, my wife and I were looking at one and I'm thinking, should we do this or shouldn't we? You know? So I said, well, I'll tell you what, you go first and I'll watch and make sure you're safe. And if it's okay, then, you know, we'll go for it. And there was this nice young lady from Canada and she had a couple of children. She was breastfeeding and she asked my wife, can I go first? Because I'm breastfeeding and I want to have time, you know, for the medicine to wear off. And so if I need to feed my kids, and my wife said, sure, you go first.
Yeah.
And she had done combo 2 days before. And so we didn't know any of this right at the time, but it was so funny. She sat there in this pose and she was just so beautiful and she was just enjoying the energy. And my wife's going, oh yeah, I'm doing this. Okay. So my wife sits down and he tells her, you know, you need to smoke enough so that you go through the bad area. Just keep smoking, just smoke as much as you can. And hold on to it. She's okay. She's thinking she's going to wind up like this girl next to her, just in this happy pose.
Yeah.
Well, needless to say, she was on the ground and she went into this like cringed body movement, extreme journey. And it continued for about 15 minutes. And then they said, well, she's going to go for another. She's one of the longer processes. So I said, are you ready to go? And I'm thinking, well, should I do this? She's going to be okay. There was another lady there. I thought, okay, everybody's watching. It'll be okay. So I sat down and I did this ceremony. And when I smoked it, literally what the real estate guy told me was true. I mean, yeah. I just exploded into the universe. Boom. Then I came back and I looked over. And I started putting my hands on my face, checking to see if I was here. I was really me.
Yeah, is there still a body here? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still here. And my wife, I look over at her, and she's still going through a process. Mm. And this is like, I don't know, probably 45 minutes now into her process. And so anyway, her process terminated about an hour later. She gets up. She's all freaked out. She goes, I want to go home. Let's go home. So I said, honey, we should just stay here because I just did BUFO too, you know. And we got to drive 2.5 hours in the rain on these slick roads. No, let's go home. So first mistake of my life. Don't ever do BUFO and then drive directly home. It's not a good idea.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was a beautiful experience. We went from there to Mexico because it gave me such a shift in perspectives. It's just, there are no other words for it. I mean, it's just the God perspective because you become the observer. You realize that you're not this body. It's not you. This is just a momentary blip in eternity. And while you're here, you better enjoy it. You know, that's my perspective.
Yeah. Let me ask you, you said that you had done quite a bit of work with ayahuasca prior to having this experience. Had your wife also been working with ayahuasca or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Not as intense, but yes, she had done quite a few ceremonies and she had had quite a few events as well. Her journey is a little bit more difficult than mine. I think it's from childhood traumas.
Yeah.
Growing up in Central America and poor families, it can be, you know, traumatizing. They get told they have to go out and work when they're 6 and 7 years old in the streets, you know, selling whatever, you know, chicles or that's Spanish, and selling gum or suckers or whatever they can sell, right? So that was kind of her her growing up. So she kind of had a tough childhood.
Yeah. And with your first experience, was it peaceful and sitting like this woman that you observed first, or was it more just explosive and ecstatic from what you
can recall? If you could have likened me to an electric lightning bolt, just shaking, that was me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a deep, deep, deep reset.
Oh, beautiful. Well, it's really nice to start with sort of these three different, we can almost even call them archetypes for how people might respond to 5-MeO, that there's such a range of possibilities, and that it's always important for people to understand that, you know, results vary, and it really depends on your energy in that moment, where you are in your life, what's happened prior to coming up to that, and that it can be really hard to judge what your experience is going to be just by observing somebody else. Like, you get to see this woman like, oh, well, she's having a great time. Well, she had just done combo. She'd probably just purged everything out. And so she was really clean in that moment. And you're all electrified and your wife is going through an extended process. These are all within the range of possibilities. So it's kind of nice to get that presentation right from your very first introduction.
Yeah, absolutely. And in my experience, I call everybody Pandora's box, because you can see the nicest little young girl. I mean, and I say young girl, young lady, yoga. They look so peaceful, and you think, oh, this is just going to be a piece of cake. And when they go, it's like, oh, wow, what happened here? You know, and then you're into the medicine, then you realize, wow, they have all these childhood traumas. They have all these issues, just like everybody, right? And so, yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful medicine. But it is to be respected indeed.
Yeah, and that whole unpacking and unwinding process is just so unique for each person. Like, everyone's got their own trajectory to go through, you know. And even people who start out with like a really blissful experience, it doesn't mean it's going to continue to be that. You know, it can shift really easily into much more difficult, challenging material.
Yes, I actually have a really good story for that one. I have and she comes to see me now quite often. She is an ex-Ranger. She was in the military. She had a lot of PTSD. She got kicked out of the military because something happened when she was on duty. Long story, she had a lot of stuff she's dealing with, right? But this is a highly trained lady, and she's as tall as I am, and I'm 6 foot. And this lady, she's 33 years old, and she's pure muscle. I mean, she's just – so I'm thinking, wow. I'm going to serve this lady who's got PTSD. She can kick my ass upside down and backwards, right?
Yeah.
So, and so my methodology is I always have helpers with me, okay? And the reason I do is because I read your book. And when I read your book and I realized why you stopped serving medicine, or one of the reasons, was because of your job. And I thought, wow, that's an important thing to realize. Safety. Because people don't realize when they're in the medicine, their body's doing all this. I think it's pre-programmed muscle memory. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
And so we surround ourselves with at least 3 to 4 people. So in case that person goes off, there's somebody there to hold them down. And here in Costa Rica, a lot of times we're doing ceremonies in retreat centers and in malocas, where there's literally no grass. There's no flat area. So you're on this hard concrete floor, and you have to put yoga mats or whatever you can find that's soft so that people can lay out, so that if they bump it, they're not cracking it open. So you really want people around you. So a long story, this lady, a beautiful person, she's going through her experience, and she's laying there, and you think, oh, God, she's just an angel. She's letting it all go. And then all of a sudden, you can see the energy building and building and building, and she just explodes. And I had two NFL guys, I mean, ex-NFL players, huge men, that were with me at the time. And it took them and 4 other people to hold her down, just to keep her from hurting herself, you know? And so it's super important, you know, people to realize that safety, personal safety, physical safety, and mental safety afterwards. And by the way, thank you so much for helping me out occasionally, because when I get a tough case, I usually send them to you, and I kind of feel bad about it, you know, but you're the expert.
Well, I appreciate it. I always like talking to people, you know, from around the world, working with different people facilitating 5-MeO, and I get to hear about what their session was like, what their experience was like. And, you know, it's such a big medicine, and I am happy. I'm really, really happy to serve in the role of being able to advise people on it. And so I don't mind at all if you send people my way. And I know it's tough, you know, as if you're facilitating and, you know, you've got your next batch of people, you know, if you're running a retreat center that, you know, sometimes people really need a lot of focused individual attention. And I understand that someone running a retreat center might not be able to give that to them. And so it's a role I am happy to play. So don't ever feel bad about sending people my way. And I enjoy sending people your way too, because I've heard nothing but good things, which again is one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on the podcast to talk about.
Well, thank you. Yeah, we try. You have a very good, I don't know if I should mention his name, but it starts with a K. He's just a beautiful person. He came from India, and he spent some time with us here, and he experimented a lot. And it was just a complete joy to have him. So definitely, it's an honor. I'd like to talk about a couple of things with you, because there's always this thing in Bufo and with providers, you know? And there's this thing about microdosing and full whiteouts.
Yeah.
And I went to WeBac a couple of years ago, and I was asked last year, but you know, with the COVID thing, it really got canceled. They did a virtual, and I just didn't feel comfortable doing a virtual one. So I just kind of backed away from it. But the theme for me is, because they seem to promote a lot of microdosing. In my perspective, when I've seen in microdosing, yeah, it lets the person think they've had a nice little Bufo journey. They don't feel too overburdened, but I don't really see much of a shift in their personal lives.
Yeah.
And then I've had that same person that's had a microdose from another provider. They said, well, I've had Bufo. I've had it. Okay. Well, okay. That's okay. Let's try my method and see how you do. And I usually load people up just as much as I can give them. And that's the truth. And how much that is I can't say, but it's a lot. And I usually let them just explode. And I try to go with them as much as I can. After 20 or so, it gets a little difficult in a day, but it is possible. I have done it. But I've noticed with a full-on whiteout, the person comes back, it really shatters their ego in a way that they realize that, hey, they've got to make a change. Or they don't, right? Either they do or they don't. But with the micro, it always seems to me as though it's kind of like feeding the ego. It's kind of like empowering it, because you didn't get past the subconscious, my perspective. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would really share your opinion on that. That I see a lot of people are doing that these days. And some people, it seems like they're not even going beyond that. That's something that's been coming up more and more in my consultations with people. They say, well, the person who provided like only gave me a little bit and said, no, that's all we're going to do. And they're like, no, I want the full experience. And like, no, this is what's good. Is just, and the people are calling it like the handshake dose or something like that.
And
I think if people are using that to work up to a full release dose, then you know, maybe that's effective. But anyone who's only had the quote-unquote handshake dose and think that they've had the 5-MeO experience or the Bufo experience, they simply haven't.
Even close.
Yeah, they have no idea. And I do think that one of the dangers there, as you say, is that then it can actually bolster the ego, that the person thinks, oh, well, I could handle that, no problem. And that even introducing people with a lower dose before going to a higher dose can give them a false sense of confidence. You know, like, oh, well, this is going to be a breeze. Like, I've got this.
Yep.
And it can also provide, it can even make it harder for them to then actually fully release when they do get the full dose, because now that they've been sort of acquainted with it a little bit, that their ego unconsciously learns how to hold on even more.
Yep.
And that's why I've always emphasized, you know, just blast people right away. You know,
that's my method as well.
Yeah. And I think that that's really the most effective. And a question that comes up a lot these days also is people say, well, should I try snorting it first because it's slower and it's a little easier, you know, and they're talking about the pure molecule. And my answer there is always no, blast yourself by smoking or vaporizing first
yeah.
and get get used to what that is. And then if you want to take a slower, gentler method, then you can get more out of it. But don't start yourself there. That really, this is the medicine that's going to completely obliterate your ego. And you want it to do that. And even if that produces a whiteout, you know, sometimes people say, well, I had a whiteout, so I missed it. It was too much. That it's still working at a subconscious level to have that experience.
I get that all the time. I don't remember my experience. Perfect. Okay. Because you just went to non-duality where there's nothing and it's just you. So what's reflecting back to you? It's just you. That's perfect. And you're right. People do make the shift after that. I tell people, you know, everybody thinks you're smoking the medicine in that 15 to 30 minute window. And that's it. No, that's just the beginning steps of your journey, you know?
Yeah. And especially when people do have a whiteout, so much of that comes back to people over time, over the following months that, you know, they get little glimpses where their energy opens up or their ego relaxes and suddenly it's like, oh, this is familiar. I remember this feeling of infinite freedom. I remember this feeling of infinite love. And so it comes back. So yeah, when I was serving people, I always told them, you know, because sometimes people are disappointed, like, oh, I had a whiteout, I missed it. And I tell them, no, that's great. It means you went all the way. And it also means, just for your personal reference, what that tells you is that your ego has no idea. It just has no reference for that. And so this is something that you can learn over time. But don't be worried that you had a whiteout. Don't think that you missed something. Yeah. So I think it is important to really give people the opportunity to go all the way from the very beginning. And that maximizes the potential and the transformative experience. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with you 100% on that one.
Yeah.
I've seen it over and over and over again.
Yeah. Well,
then you have the people who are overly sensitive. You know, maybe just a little overly sensitive. And when they come back, for whatever reason, women tend to be much more sensitive than men. They're that way for naturally anyway.
Yeah.
But you do notice sometimes that you think, well, did I give them too much? You know? And then I think over time, I don't think that you can actually overload somebody because I haven't been able to do it. And I've given people a lot of medicine. I had a lady who I gave 5 full doses to. 5 within 2 hours.
Yeah.
And she hadn't had a period in over 20 years. She told me a month later, guess what? I got my period. So, you know, it's a mystery to me why some people literally, they get so much energy coming into them after Bufo and some people don't. I've not been able to identify why. Some people are more susceptible to that than others. And then as it happens, you try to you know, help them integrate and, you know, tell them all the things they need to be told, get in the grass, hug trees, all these things that help ground them. And I'd love to talk about that a little bit, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go right ahead. Though I just want to put it out there. I do want to circle back that you were kind of starting to tell the story of how you went to Mexico. And so we can come back to that and maybe get a little bit more of your history of how you got into it. But since this is on your mind right now, yeah, let's go ahead and get into some of the after practices and after effects.
Yes, I'm curious as to, you know, a specific person, and you know this person because I sent them to you here a few weeks ago. I have served her before, and she's had before, I believe, 2 prior, and perfect, just beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And in the last one that I gave her, she did really well, and then she went to a place of realizing there's no point, there is a point, there is no point, blah, blah, blah. It's just a program running in her mind.
Yeah.
My perception. And then when she finally calmed down, she was having lots of inability to maintain herself. Self-control, feeling like she's just lost. And the next morning I got up, the first thing I did was I went and gave her another small Bufo. That seemed to calm her down immensely. And I've done that with a few people. And I tend to think, I don't know if you could imagine a circuit breaker. I think 5-MeO creates such a strong connection to whatever is connecting the neural net or whatever it is that's happening, that's creating this journey. And sometimes it doesn't disconnect, or maybe it's halfway engaged. And so that person is still going through that receiving that energetic. But for whatever reason, I think it's just like kind of like giving somebody just a little tap on the shoulder and it just lets it go. And that's the buffo. The second buffo will just let that go. Your perspective?
Yeah, I'm actually really glad that you brought this up, because this is another sort of recurring theme that comes up with a lot of people who find themselves when they are in a position where they really feel that they need integration. In other words, people who feel like, oh my goodness, like maybe I've messed myself up, or I can't stop this, or this is out of control, or I don't know what to do. And just as you're saying here, that this is one of the places where the universal advice I give to people is, if you're having trouble post BUFO or post 5-MeO, the best thing you can actually do is go and do it again. Because just like you say, what it indicates to me is that a process of energy has started, and it's not quite complete yet. And so you're not able to ground back into normal reality or normal functionality. And it seems really counterintuitive to a lot of people, because they're like, well, that just fucked me up. And now I'm head over heels. I don't know what to do. And it can seem like, well, why on the earth would I ever want to do that again if these are the results that I got? But it does seem to have that clearing out and grounding property. And even there, it doesn't need to be a monumental dose. It can just be a small dose, but just to kind of open that energy back up again and then let someone settle down. And it's a very effective route for getting over a difficult reintegration process. But often people who are in that phase, they're terrified of taking more. Because they feel like, no, I'm really losing my shit here, and I don't want to lose more of my shit.
Exactly.
But I think also what you point out here is very important, that as you said, that she had two experiences prior to coming to you. And this is another area where it's important for people not to expect the same thing. That
exactly.
Because the people you're with, that changes, and that can have an impact on your experience, the environment that you're in, where you are at personally on that day, and also just where you are in your process. That a previous experience with BUFO or 5-MeO does not inform you what any subsequent session is going to be like. And so I think it's always good for people to have the expectation of, okay, I'm going to do this, but I do not know what I'm going to get this time around.
Right.
And if they can really embrace that and really look at it as, all of this is a process, and it's not just the event, but it's what happened before, what happens during, what happens after, and really approaching it that way, and also approaching it with the idea of, I will be willing to go through it as many times as I need to reach that place of grounding and centeredness and presence, and not leave myself hanging, even though that can be a very terrifying place for people to be in. But
agreed.
Yeah, I thoroughly agree with your suggestion to her to, well, just have a little more. And it's amazing the difference that can make for people.
Yeah, no, it is amazing. I actually came across a lady here in Costa Rica. She had been, I think it was 4 or 5 years, she had been in a really bad place. And of course, when I told her, you know, just do another BUFO, she's like, no way. There's just no way. And it took me literally probably 3 months to convince her. And she finally came to my house and sat in my backyard. And she asked me afterwards, why did I wait so long? I said, well, I don't know.
Yeah.
it's just because people, you know, if you have a bad experience, if you eat something, you know, if you eat chicken wings that are bad, maybe you don't want to go back and eat chicken wings for a while. So, I mean, I think it's a human thing. You know, we just don't want to receive it again. Even though it might be the cure. It's kind of like drinking a beer after you had a hangover. Maybe it'll make you feel better, right?
Yeah. But I do think it's a really important message with 5-MeO, because certainly a lot of people are left in that state of feeling like, wow, I'm incomplete, I'm ungrounded, and I don't know what to do. And it often is the answer. Go take it again. And really encouraging people that even when they're terrified, that it really produces almost miraculous results for people.
It does. It really does. I mean, a lady asked me, I mean, why didn't I do it before? Again, I don't know. It would have been wise for you. But, and again, I didn't know to tell her either until I discovered it. And a lot of it was thanks to you, again, through reading through your books. And I can tell you, anybody that's interested in serving medicine, they definitely need to be reading your books, okay?
Oh, thank you.
Because what you're telling them is pretty spot on from my perspective, again. I've seen a lot of shamanic ideology, especially coming back to Mexico. You go to Mexico and you get the people rattling the rattles and shaking the shakes and whatever it is they do. And in all honesty, to me, it's mostly a show for the audience or maybe for themselves. Because the person, once they smoke and they think, oh, fuck, what have I done? It's too late.
Yeah.
Okay. It's just simply too late. You're gone one way or another. And you can fight yourself or you can just surrender. Obviously, if you surrender, it's going to be a much more pleasant journey. But if you fight yourself, then so be it. It's just you. And all the rattles and this noise and all these things, the people aren't even there. They can hear it because you totally go silent. Everything goes silent because you become energy. You're not hearing. You're not here. And so, you know, I see a lot of that and I think, what's the point? But then again, okay, so I guess it has its purpose. Because it makes people think it's something, and I'm taking anything away from shamans, and I don't consider myself a shaman at all by any means. I'm just a guy who's helping out people as I can, and I don't make a living at it. It's not my thing. I actually work in the real world and do this as a hobby, and I don't want to make that sound like it's a hobby. It's meaningless. It's not. It's my passion, but I don't make a living at it. It's not my main source of income, and so. You know, back in Mexico, it's a beautiful country. People need to be very careful who they receive the medicine from, get lots of references. Never, ever, ever do medicine alone with somebody. Never go into a room, especially if you're a female, alone with somebody. Don't do it, okay? Make sure you're with friends, with people. I can't imagine anybody trying to abuse somebody in medicine, but, you know, you hear that it happens. And it's a stain on the industry. And it shouldn't be that way, but it is. And then also you have the other side where you have, and I hope nobody gets offended by what I'm about to say, but you have women who sometimes the medicine or the 5-MeO activates their kundalini. And I've had literally in front of a crowd of people, women strip their clothes off and start humping my leg. Okay.
Yeah.
And all I can do is hold on to them and try and keep them safe until their process has ended. And then, you know, hopefully my helpers are around me and they're covering her with a blanket, but just so there's nothing inappropriate. Right. So if the person sees a video of that, would they be thinking, okay, what is this guy doing to this girl?
Yeah.
There's so many different perspectives to look at and just to be careful. And I would recommend anybody that's serving medicine, don't do it alone. Make sure that there's plenty of females with you and plenty of males with you. That way you're safe and be public about it. That's my two cents on that one.
Yeah. Well, I think that that's really great advice. And this is something that I've remarked on, you know, in other contexts as well that, and I think it actually goes back to a statement that you said earlier that, it can be easier for women to really go deeper with the medicine than it can be for men. And I think it has energetically to do with our sexual natures, that men sexually, kind of the goal is to contain your energy for as long as possible and manage your energy as long as possible. Whereas for a woman, energetically, sexually, is to open and surrender and just release, 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 release. And so that there is something that's a bit more attuned to that female kind of energy with the 5-MeO experience. And just as you say, it's actually much more common for women to completely strip off all their clothes and become very, very sexually active on 5-MeO. Mm-hmm. And that there are times where that can be directed to the person facilitating the experience.
Right.
And it's not even that they're thinking like, oh yeah, I really want this guy over there. It's just this energy just
That's
shows
right.
up. Yeah.
They don't even know that they're doing it.
No.
They have no idea.
No.
None. Zero.
Yeah. Yet it's an important part of the process. So it needs to be recognized. And that's also where, if there are people who want to be abusive, you know, that window is there, that opportunity is there. So I think that the advice that you're giving, like, don't just go alone, especially to someone that you don't know, that you haven't vetted, that you really, anytime you're working with this medicine, you want to be with people that you love, that you trust, that you feel that you're safe with. And in that context, you know, doing it in the public, in the open, like in a retreat in a maloka or something like that, that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. Because it provides safety and protection for people. And that also, it's okay for people to become radically sexualized during this experience. Because,
absolutely.
Because it is ecstatic and it is orgasmic.
It's expression.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. And it just takes people with integrity to be able to meet that energy and allow that person that experience and, you know, then encourage them to continue to move forward in their process. You know, it's just part of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful process. We had a really spectacular event this weekend. We served medicine Thursday and Friday. And Friday came a young woman who had been raped 3 weeks before. I wasn't aware of it until she came. When she sat down and before the medicine, I always try to go by and talk to the people, see what's going on, make sure they're not on antidepressants. If they are, what are they? I've noticed that, you know, a lot of people in medicine think that you're on antidepressant means you can't use Bufo. That's not true. What I've discovered is that it's the MAOs that you really got to watch out for. The SSRIs don't seem to be so much of a danger. Even the SSRIs to me seem like they allow the person to resist the medicine. Mm-hmm. So you need to give them more rather than not give them at all. Whereas an MAO, you might blow their head off. So it's not a good idea. So anyway, I always go through and talk to people and kind of get where they're feeling them out and talking to them. That's another thing I stress to my helpers is talk to the people, because a lot of times people will lie to me because they want to have the experience.
Yeah.
And they're not willing to tell me that, yeah, I didn't actually go off my meds, but they'll tell my helper, please don't tell the guy, but I'm here just because I want to try it out, you know? And then my helper comes along and tells me, goes, oh, you need to know this. And so then I have to go talk to them and see what is really going on. And we've had a couple of them, you know, slip through. But yeah, it's a dangerous thing. People have to realize that they're literally taking their lives into their hands. Be careful. Be careful who's serving you. Be careful what you're taking as the individual. Make sure that it's okay with the medicine, because not everything is. Most is. And again, I think it's the MAOs in my experience that you got to watch out for. But then there's a lot of new stuff coming out, and who knows, right?
Yeah.
So be careful, people. So Mexico is a beautiful country. I love it. I've spent months and months in Mexico just exploding in medicine, trying it out. I discovered the difference between male and female Bufo. I've never tried synthetic, so I can't compare that because I've just never had it. I've never had access to it. I've always just had the Bufo. And I didn't realize that there was a difference between male and female until a gentleman gave me the experience. And wow, there is considerable difference.
And,
okay.
Yeah. What was that for you? I'm really curious.
Okay. Well, male is kind of like male energy. It's like it's that rocket ship, you know, you hold on, smoke, get ready, blast off. You're going. And there's no option for you. You're just going, right? And typically, it's not as visual. It's more like just into the light or into whatever it is, and they're done. Female is different, okay? Female is gentle. It's like she wraps her arms around you, and she's gently taking you, and you're just accepting it, and then all of a sudden, you just go, whoosh. For me, it was 3 times more visual than the male, for whatever reason. I don't know why. So that was my first experiences with the male and the female. And I've tested it. Female Bufo on people who have never had Bufo is pointless, because they'll never understand the difference. So typically the people who I just have met and they're just their first few experiences of Bufo, it's male. It's just, it's easier to get. The female's a little more complicated to get. And I guess it's the difference between eating fish eggs and caviar. Maybe that's a good analogy. If you didn't know any better, you'd probably just make the assumption it's the same. But there is a difference between the energies. Big, big difference. And so when I find people who are in need of feminine energy in a big way, and sometimes it's the guys, it's funny because they're the big rah, rah, rah. Especially, you know, I got the big egos running around. It happens to me a lot with the football. The NFL guys are just the funniest, you know. They're they're huge, and they think they're powerful, and they're in their 50s, and they're still thinking they're in their 30s, and it's all this testosterone, and you give them a little female buffalo, and you just see them melt like butter. It's just funny, you know, really funny. So that's my experience with the male and female. And again, I learned that in Mexico. I have a very good friend of mine who has a center in Puerto Morelos, I think is the name of it. It's in between Cancun and Playa del Carmen. And the name of it is Akasha. And he's just started this thing out. And he kind of basically has gone on the journey with me. We started out pretty much at the same time. And we learn from one another. And I think that's something else that's really important for people who are thinking of serving at some point in their life, is you need to find somebody who's got quite a bit of experience that you can reach out to, because you're going to have a lot of questions and a lot of you don't knows, you know, you just don't know. And obviously, if you can set with people as much as you can, the better off you're going to be. I mean, I have people, undoubtedly, every four or five people I serve buffo to wants to serve buffo, because they think it's easy. You just light a pipe and, you know, send somebody off into the universe and it's over. But that doesn't even begin to cover it. And there's just so many, you know, liabilities legally, physically, mentally, on and on and on. It's, you know, it's not for the light of heart.
And I think the more you serve it, the more you see how many different ways people react and how many different ways people either have ease integrating or have difficulty integrating. And again, just the variance between one session and the next that, you know, I think with a lot of these people, like you say, that they have it once and they're like, oh man, that was so easy. I want to serve this because that was amazing. And I want to share this with everyone, which is a totally normal reaction. I mean, anyone who experiences the most ecstatic, beautiful thing of their life is going to want to share it with other people. But just like I use myself as an example, that when I had my first full 5-MeO experience, my mistaken notion was, oh, this does this for everyone. Everyone goes right into this infinite love, infinite light, infinite consciousness, and it's the best thing ever. And then the more I saw, the more I realized, oh, that's not true at all. That's a potential. But that doesn't mean that just everyone is just going to have this blissful, amazing experience, that actually there's a wide range of reactions, and that it changes for the same person from one day to the next. So you really never know. And so just like you say, anyone who starts serving, if they don't have that level of experience, that they're going to have a lot of questions and they're going to encounter reactions in people that they don't know how to help with or to deal with. And just like you say, sometimes you might be some huge guy who gets up and, like, a lot of times with men, they really like to embody that masculine energy. And they're like, you know, they're up there in like warrior pose, like, And really what we want to see in the men is, well, actually, I want to see you melt. Let's see. Like, it's great that you're embodying. And, you know, some men actually are not really in their masculine energy. And so they need some of that to kind of come up. That's and like, I'm firm, I'm strong. But then eventually we do want everybody just to melt and surrender, because that's where the real goods are.
That's right. Balance.
Yeah.
Just balance.
Yeah. And you never know when you're going to be attacked, or you never know when someone is going to become hypersexual. And, you know, and we should also say that, you know, it's not just women. Men become hypersexual as well. I mean, I had a number of men try and become sexual with me in
sessions,
you know, because it's... Everyone's drawn to 5-MeO, not just heterosexual people, you know, gay, lesbian, bisexual, polyamorous, whatever, you know, they're all out there. And, you know, a lot of people,
they're humans.
Yeah, a lot of people are seeking this experience. And so, you know, we need to make room for all of that, allow all of that, and provide a safe, supportive context. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's... You see guys all the time have erections. Sometimes that we had they'll pee themselves. You know, I haven't had anybody actually have, you know, defecate yet. So, but if they do, it's okay. It's just, you know, it's another thing that comes out of the human body, so it's going to be all right.
I did
But
have
it's.
I had one person once who actually needed to eat their own feces in their session. That
Wow.
it was for whatever reason that, you know, there it's this dynamic of overcoming the sense of, oh, it's gross and it's nasty and ooh, but this was like, no, this is a part of me, so it's okay. And it's not like this person like ate a whole bunch or anything, but you know, it was
Right.
more of a taste, and that was very important for that person, you know? So these kinds of things happen.
Yes, indeed. That's the thing. You have to just be accepting all that is, you know, just accept it. You know, just accept it. It's okay. It's gonna be okay.
And really let the people know, oh, it's okay. It's fine that you did that. It's fine that you peed yourself, you know, that there's nothing to be ashamed of, that we're all
That's
human
right.
and we all have
That's right.
these human energies to live through. And I mean, it's the greatest thing when you get to actually experience that and overcome that and embrace all these levels of yourself. It's so beautiful, isn't it?
Yes, it is indeed. It's for me. That's why I call it my passion, because it's just you see a person who literally has their life upside down and backwards. They don't know what they're doing. It's a disaster. They're on the brink of a divorce, whatever. On and on and on it goes. So many different stories. And then they take the medicine and they realize, oh my God, all these stupid little things that I thought were so important, they don't mean anything. And you know, when I leave this earth, when I die, because you know, I just went through an ego death, and that's what I tell people. Scares the hell out of them in the beginning. They come in and they sit, and I said, you know, you're gonna die, right? They look at me, they do this weird. I said, now it's an ego death. It's not a physical death. It's an ego death. Okay, but I say that, and the reason that I say that is because in the beginning, I didn't really mention that to people, and then I had a lot of people get very angry at me. And because you
Really?
didn't tell me, yeah, I've had people yell and scream at me and tell me I'm a dirty hippie and you know, many, many foul words and stomp off mad. And typically, about 2 to 3 weeks later, they'll call you up and they'll apologize and thank you for that's the typical, right?
When they finally catch on, like, oh, that was all me, just,
Exactly.
you know, projecting onto him. Well,
Yeah.
so, you know, I've got a couple questions I really want to ask you, and one is, when did you then make the transition into serving? And then we can circle back around to this question that just popped up right now with what you said is like, so what is your preparation for people at this point before serving them? But let's talk about how you transitioned into actually serving first.
Okay, well, I went to Mexico a couple of times because I wanted to continue my journey with Bufo because it had really a paradigm shift for myself. All the ayahuasca, I did more, and I'm not taking anything away from ayahuasca, don't get me wrong. It's beautiful medicine, it has its point and its purpose. But one session with Bufo did more for me than 40 sessions of ayahuasca. So I thought, wow, this is powerful stuff. I really need to dig in here because there's something here for me to understand. And so I kept going back to Mexico. And I met with this guy, and really nice guy. And he was just beginning to serve combo at the time. And I had received combo before in Costa Rica and hadn't had any issues with it. And I thought, that's no big deal. You just take a couple of, you know, burn spots on your arm and get some combo puke and shit and whatever it is that you need to do to clean yourself up. And it's really good for your autoimmune system. So this guy says, you want to try some combo? I said, oh, okay. So I did it and I blew up like a big bullfrog and wasn't vomiting. And so he came along and he gave me a micro dose of Bufo. Well, in my journey, it was fantastic. Okay. I had the most visual, fantastic journey of my life. On the other hand, my wife was watching it. She says it wasn't so pleasant. She saw me puking blood. Okay. So what I learned there is never serve Bufo with combo. Okay. The reason is Bufo magnifies everything. Combo is a toxin. It creates your body to squeeze all of its lymphatic system, organs, and everything. And so you're adding something that's multiplying it by 1,000 times. Maybe, I mean, I don't know what Bufo does, but it magnifies things. The good, the bad, the ugly, all of it gets magnified. My perspective on the energy-wise. So anyway, I puked blood. She had also had received combo, but she didn't go through a process. And when she saw me, she was freaking out.
Yeah.
So she didn't vomit. She was going, oh no, we're sitting here on a beach in Cancun. These guys, if we die, they're just going to throw us in the ocean and walk away. And you're just two dead tourists, right? This is what's going through my wife's mind. So I came out of it going, hey, honey, how are you? You're great. She's looking at me like I'm nuts, right? Just nuts. And I'm going, are you okay? She goes, no, let's go, let's go. Okay, okay, honey, let's go. So I talked to the little Chaman guy, and I said, hey, do you mind if I buy some from you? Can I get some from you? And he said, yeah, I'll sell you some, and I'll give you a pipe. I said, okay, I want to. He said, now what you need to do is gently, gently, gently get accustomed to it. Don't go full on. Go little by little by little. Anyway, bad advice. Don't anybody do what he told me to do, please. Not a good idea. So anyway, on the way back home, this is 3 days after the ceremony, my wife on the plane, her combo kicks in. She starts hallucinating. And so I take her to the bathroom. She goes into the bathroom, and the stewardess are all looking at us like, God, what are you guys doing, you know? They go, oh, no, she ate something bad, you know? She just got really bad Montezuma, you know? She ate something bad in Mexico. Oh, okay. So they laid her down in the front seats and let her rest there. And when I got her through immigration, got her through all those things, you know, everybody's looking at me a little funny, you know? I'm thinking, God, I hope they don't really search us over here because I'm carrying stuff, right? Not much, but enough to get you in trouble. And got home, called the guy, and he said, oh, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And talked to another gentleman. You know him, it's Octavio. I know he has a lot of bad press, but he actually did help me out. Didn't serve the medicine, didn't have anything to do with him. I just reached out to him, and he said, well, do this and this and this. So the very first person I ever served Bufo to was my wife. Mm. And so I got her to drink as much water as she could. That's what he told me to do. Get her to drink as much water as you can get her to drink, and then give her a Bufo. Well, she puked and puked and puked, and it ended. Okay?
Yeah.
That was my first introduction into being a server of Bufo. So that's kind of where it went for me, and I just continued on and on and on and on, and that's the story, brother.
Yeah, well, that highlights some important issues, that this is also something that comes up in my consultations with people, that sometimes, like with your wife, she took the combo, but the effects didn't show up until days later. And this can happen with other medicines as well, where somebody thinks they got a dud.
Uh-huh.
And maybe even their body has completely processed that medicine by that point, but the energy hasn't processed. And so
right.
Then that can show up later, and it could be very surprising. And this does sound like great advice that Octavio gave you, that she needed to purge. And it probably what happened, and I'm just speculating, I wasn't there, but I think that probably she saw that your experience and it frightened her. And so then,
of course,
then internally,
yeah, she was traumatized.
Yeah, she was able to shut down the process within herself,
yep,
in that immediate environment because she wasn't feeling safe. But then as she was relaxing, like, it's this irony of like, oh, I'm going home, I can relax, but that energy, it hasn't processed through yet. So now it starts to show up. And this is another one of these beautiful places where, you know, you can go and drink ayahuasca and you can hope you're going to purge, and you might have hours of waiting for it. But if you really need to purge, Bufo or 5-MeO is literally the greatest, because it's like there's no suffering. There's no lead up. Like, if you need to purge, it's just going to pop and it's going to come right out, and it's going to be deeper and more thorough than really any other methodology, I think, you know,
that it, yeah.
And yeah. That she had water in her system, that's really important. Like, sometimes people talk about, well, should I have an empty stomach or whatever? And I always tell people, well, if you are going to purge, it's actually helpful to have something to purge, whether it's water or food, so that there is that substance coming out, and it makes the process easier than just dry heaving.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah. I agree with you. I'm going to make a statement really quick. It's very important for people, in my perspective, don't combine Bufo and combo at the same time. I think there's a couple of cases where in Spain, where somebody's liver or kidney basically exploded, the person died. Mm. It's real important. If you're going to mix the two, then at least have a few hours between, right? And make sure the person has gone through their combo experience itself as much as possible. Even though my wife was 3 days later, just don't want people to hear this and think it's okay. The other really big thing I hear is, and I don't know this personally, it's just what I've been told and what I've read, is the, you can do bufo before ayahuasca. And I personally have done it a few hours before an ayahuasca ceremony and had a fantastic ayahuasca ceremony. But I've heard that people have tried to use before, after ayahuasca, and for the substance, I think it's harmaline in ayahuasca, creates some sort of reaction in some people, not all, but in some. And you don't want to be the lucky one that hits the bingo on if you're the one, because you'll be dead.
Yeah.
So before, not after.
Yeah, I think that that's important advice. And I think it particularly applies specifically to bufo. I don't know if it's so much an issue with the pure synthetic molecule, but definitely I have heard cases of people taking bufo shortly after ayahuasca and getting into difficulties and, you know, sometimes going into serotonin shock syndrome or something of that nature, where it seems to have like a toxic combination, you know. And so at least, I think at least 24 hours is a good measure between, you know, ayahuasca and bufo. And also, I think it's just important, you know, for everybody working in the medicine world of, you know, there's no need to push it. There's plenty of time, everyone. There's plenty of time. You don't need to rush from your combo to ayahuasca to bufo and fit it all into one day. You know?
Yeah. You know, I see this in retreats, because in a retreat, you have a limited time span to deal with people, and people are it's basically, you know, they're trying to get what they paid for, so to speak. So, I mean, they're doing the bufo, and then they're doing the ayahuasca, and then they're doing the next ceremony. And they come out, you know, and they don't know which medicine did what, because they've had so many, they have no clue.
Yeah.
And so I think the benefits of each one of the medicines kind of gets lost in there a little bit. But again, who am I to say? Because it's a beautiful experience, and I'm an extremist anyway. So, I mean, if I can do it, they can do it, and it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's just good advice just to remind people that they can pace themselves, and that, you know, not everybody needs to rush to the end, you know, enjoy the journey, enjoy the process. And yeah, every medicine brings its own energy. It has its own presentation, it has its own way of helping us learn how to be ourselves and to be well within ourselves. And you know, I'm a big fan of combining things. I love the novelty of combining different medicines together and experiencing them, but it's always important to be safe. Don't combine things that shouldn't go together, you know, like,
right. Yeah.
You know, I hadn't heard that about combo and bufo before, but I know that a lot of people these days are doing combo before doing a bufo session. And also a lot of people are combining in hape now as well. And sometimes it doesn't work out so well for people. So it's just good to leave a little bit of time, like give yourself time to don't immediately do one thing after another. And also, because as we've been talking about, that sometimes these processes, they can take weeks to sort through, you know?
Yeah. And if you just, how did you integrate a process, and which one are you integrating in? You know, it's an issue sometimes, definitely.
Yeah. So after serving your wife, you know, how did you get into the practice of serving others? Did you make yourself available? Did people show up, or how did it work?
Went back to Mexico. Hooked up with one of the guys that I had met there, and we just started playing around with each other, serving one another a little bit here, a little bit there. And then I came back and I started out with friends and family. Mm-hmm. You know, welcome to the family, friends and family. Be my guinea pigs. And that's really where it began. We saw some huge shifts in our friends and our family, and it just kept growing. And then, you know, once one person does it, then they'll talk to 10 people, and those 10 people, maybe 5 will come. And then it's an exponential growth so big now that I literally have to turn my phone off and hide, because people are constantly reaching out to me to receive the medicine. And I discovered I can't serve the world, and it's just not possible.
Yeah.
And, there's a few things that I tell people. I know that here's another really important thing to make sure that you have people around you in bufo. People, when they're going through that process, you can literally program them. Okay. on their subconscious level, you can do a lot. I only have about four or five things that I say to people specifically. It's basically love yourself, forgive yourself, have compassion for yourself, and accept yourself as you are. And that's what I repeat over and over and over and over and over again. Okay. But I have seen other people who have been programmed, you know, I need some help financially. I need this. I need that. I'm opening some clinics. Could you help me? Blah, blah, blah. And so the person comes out of medicine, their heart's really open, and they subconsciously thinking, I need to help this guy. So, you know, let me get out my checkbook. I mean, I literally have seen it. So that's another important thing for people to make the realization is if you have somebody there, make sure what's being said, okay? What was that person giving you? Because you're at your weakest point of your subconscious is very open at that point. And you can program people in a good way or a bad way, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. And that's something that I haven't heard somebody bring up before. And it just makes me recall of back when I was serving, there was a handful of things that I would actually say to people during the medicine. One was, first of all, back when I was serving people, I never used personal names while we were working with the medicine. I always just called everybody love because I didn't want to use their personal name because that would just bring my ego back all the time. Yeah, so I'd say, breathe into yourself, love, or trust your breath. And I would tell them, remember, or come back to center, or just stay focused, you know, just really short phrases. And you know, sometimes, of course, when you're working with people with 5-MeO, they're not actually consciously registering the language that they won't be able to tell you. I mean, this is where we get into this issue of programming, right? Because they won't necessarily be able to tell you what was said to them, but they might have the intuition that I know somebody said something and it was just what I needed to hear at that time. But it's important that they be short phrases that they encourage that person to support themselves, right?
Absolutely. That's the key.
Yeah. And not even like getting into like saying like, I'm here to help you, because then that creates duality. Like, oh, this person, oh yeah, help me, right? That
Yes.
A little phrase like, you can trust, something like that. Or even just trust, right? Just one word that can do it.
I tell them to help yourself. Help yourself. You got yourself in this, get yourself out.
Yeah.
Help yourself.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there definitely could be an overdependence on someone outside of help me, help me, help me, you know, or make it stop. That's one that I used to get from time to time.
It's like, oh, no, it's always there.
Yeah.
Like, no, here, have another one. We'll stop.
Yeah. No, have some more. Yeah.
That happens a lot.
So when I said, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm running over.
No, it's okay. I was just going to bring it back to how you said that you figured out that you needed to tell people ahead of time that this would be an ego death. So I was just curious about kind of how would you orient people to the medicine? And I'll just share just one quick one for myself that, you know, since I was always taking the medicine with my clients, and I didn't realize when I was first doing that they could actually feel the effects when I took a hit. And so the first time that became an issue was, it was a woman who was working with me who had been sexually traumatized by a man. And so she was very guarded. And I took a hit while she was still down on the mat. And she just sat up and she's like, what the fuck did you just do to me? I was like, whoa. Okay. And so then after that, I learned I would tell people, look, I'm taking the medicine with you. There will be times where I'm taking it and you will feel the effects of that. And so that was one of these things that I learned. Okay, I've got to tell everyone this before we start so that we don't have that same effect of the woman like, whoa, what are you doing to me? You know, because she felt like I was doing something to her. So it's kind of along the lines of, yeah, this is an ego death. You're going to have a death experience. So, how did you develop your orientation and what is it that you do to kind of ease people into the experience?
Well, basically, most of the medicine that we've served in the last year has been served in my backyard, the majority of it. Mm-hmm. We were in pandemic here. The retreats were all closed down, but yet we were just bombarded with people. And so my wife was kind enough to say, well, let's just do it in our backyard, you know? And as people come into our house, you know, and literally people are looking for this little Indian with a pluma or a feather, you know, coming out of their, you know, it's so funny. And they come to my home, and in my home is, it's in a very upscale neighborhood. You would never in a million years dream, you know, that there's this little guy serving buffalo out of his house in this little community. You just, except when you hear the screams.
that's something's going on over there.
Yeah. And so usually when they come in, we invite them in, we set them down. So would you like some water, and show them where the bathroom is. And basically I go through what buffalo is, you know, where it comes from Sonora, comes from a toad. Because everybody has these concepts. Oh, you lick the toad because they've seen maybe The Simpsons, or they've seen some show, and they have this thought. And I said, no, it's nothing like that. It's a compound within the secretion of the toad. Then I go through the process of, and I tell them this story. I said, look, basically, imagine looking at an ant farm. You have a black colony, you have your red colony, you put food and water in the center. Okay, what's going to happen? And I let them answer. And they all say the same thing. Well, they're going to fight over the resources. Exactly. What do we do as humans? We're all fighting over the resources, right? So you're at the level of the ant. You understand that level now. Oh, yeah, we get it. Okay. All right. So at the level of the ant, we're talking about life and death. But now, as I'm looking down from above, looking down, that looks pretty cool down there. It looks like they're having fun. You know, nobody's getting hurt. It's just a bunch of ants. That's the God perspective.
Yeah.
That's what I want to show you. And the only way that I can show you that is to allow you to go through an ego death. That means your ego is going to die. Not you physically, but who you believe that you are. And sometimes people get really nervous, and sometimes they leave. And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know? We make sure they understand they're surrounded by people, because I always have helpers. I said, look, you're surrounded by people. We're all here. We even have doctors who are trained. That sit with us as helpers. And so if anything were to happen to you on a physical level, you still got a professional here. Somebody here knows how to give you CPR. Somebody knows how to help you. And I've never, ever had an instance where it was ever needed, ever.
Yeah.
I've had a few people stop breathing, and then you start pushing on their chest to help them reactivate, and they take off on their own. So I've never even had to use my CPR training, ever. Thank the good Lord. Or thank me, because I am the good Lord. So it's all just making them feel comfortable, allowing them to see that they're safe. And I think that's the key for us. Also, you know, I serve medicine with my wife, so there's a male-female aspect to it. So mm-hmm. I think that helps people. There's not some creepy white dude, you know. He's got a wife and a family and that kind of stuff. So I think that helps.
Yeah. And I'm just curious, you need to speak for her, but I'm just curious what your wife thinks of all of this.
Oh, wow. You know, she's a very, very beautiful person in the aspect that she loves to see people heal. Because she's healing herself as well, right? We were just talking about this last night. She said, you know, sometimes I get so tired of this, because she does almost all of the scheduling, all of the stuff that I don't want to do. Well, she does all of that, you know, and I'm very thankful that I have her. I couldn't do what I do without her. And we sat down and we had a buffalo experience yesterday, her and myself. After the ceremony, we drove 4 hours back home. The next day, we were really tired. I had accumulated a lot of energy, and I said, look, honey, I just need to go out in the backyard. I'm going to sit down. I'm just going to do a buffalo. Would you just set and make sure I don't, you know, like start banging my head or, you know, something on the grass. And she's like, yeah, but I'm usually really, really calm, but you never know, right? It's right. Still a potential.
Yeah.
Even with myself. And so she sat down and I got a big bowl and I smoked it, and I'm standing there looking at her. And it takes a lot of buffalo now for me to go, because I have consumed so much. It takes quite a bit for me to really release. So I'm sitting there holding on, and she's looking at me and says, aren't you going anywhere? And I said, no. Said, well, let me have a little more. And she said, well, here. And so I gave her a little bit, and she just like fell right into my arms. And I'm sitting there holding on to all of the smoke. Okay, there we go. Let it go. And then just relaxed into it. And she just went right off with me. And we had the most beautiful journey together. Because we're couples, you know, and we have our little spits and spats and arguments. And people tend to think that they need to put us on a pedestal, and they don't, because we're just human, just like everybody else.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful process. And sometimes, you know, she wants to give up. Sometimes I want to give up. And sometimes we look at each other and say, no, let's go again. Here we go. So, we kind of call each other Pinky in the Brain. We're just trying to conquer the world.
Nice. So how is it that people find you and show up, and, you know, how often are you serving? I mean, it sounds like you're pretty busy.
Yeah. You know, in the beginning, it was word of mouth. So it was very easy. And we would do like small groups, four or five people, blah, blah, blah. And then pretty quickly that translated into 15 to 20. And then all of a sudden, oh shit, we have too many people. So we have to start doing a variety of days. It got to a point where I was doing 3 to 4 ceremonies per week. And that could be anywhere from 10 to 12 people. It was too much, way too much, because I have the tendency to smoke right along with the people, just as yourself. I smoke almost as much as they do. And I just needed to step back. And also because we had a couple of incidences here in our condominium where the front guard is probably 3 blocks away, but they called my house and asked what was going on. Why is the lady screaming?
Yeah.
Well, that's why, oh, you know, I got to stop doing this in my house because something's going to happen. You know, the neighbors are going to get upset or they're going to call the police, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, long story, the police can't come in here anyway without a warrant, but who wants to go through that? And that would be traumatizing to the person who received the medicine, so on and so forth, right? Yeah. So we decided, you know, it's better to just serve in a retreat center where people can yell and scream and rip their clothes off and do whatever they need to do, and it's okay. They're in a safe place. And that's kind of what's going on there. How much do I serve? I serve a lot of medicine to a lot of people. I think we're averaging between 70 to 80 people monthly. That's probably on my average right now. And I need to slow that down because it's affecting me.
Yeah, that's a lot of work, a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, a lot of medicine. We did a ceremony, but now it'd be 3 weeks ago, and I had 38 people in 2 days. And a lot of those had to go 2 to 3 times. And so by the time it was over, I had smoked well over 50 doses within 2 days of Buffo, and I was just toast.
Yeah.
Toast. I don't even know how I did it, but and I don't recommend anybody following my footsteps. I noticed some shifts in the way that I think. It was very hard for me to concentrate for about a week. Literally, I couldn't. 1 + 1 = 2, but I couldn't figure it out. You know, so you can do too much is my point, and people need to be aware of that.
Yeah. So for you, what is being served by you taking the medicine with the client? And you know, as we know, for me, that was a vital part of how I practiced. And some people are really standoffish to that and even take offense, like the idea that how dare you consume this while you're working with someone. But I think it serves a purpose. But I'm just interested to hear, what is your philosophy on that?
What I can say is, if you're not smoking before or 5-MeO with a person, you don't really know where they are at an energetic level. There's right. just no way to know.
Right.
You can step back and look at the person and be the observer, but you've got no idea what's coming. I can literally feel the energy boiling up like 15 seconds maybe a second before it's going to happen. So I know to get into position. I know where to go. And I follow my helpers going, how does he know this? It's because I'm the one going with the person. You can literally go into a person's journey sometimes, literally see what they're seeing, feel what they're feeling, and you can just say the right thing at the right moment, and that's all it took. And just boom, we just like the universe explodes, things relax. Energetically, you can reach the point where you're seeing literally just pixels of energy, and the person becomes energized. It's really, most people probably won't believe me, but it's you can see where these blotches of energy, and it can be red, dark, blue. Just a different varieties. And I think it's emotions. I haven't totally put together what each color means, and it doesn't really matter to me, But sometimes you can just gently touch a person and then that one little spot and you'll see them go, or maybe you'll vomit for them. Maybe you'll purge for them. And people are, why is he puking? Why is he belching? And the person is just smiling as you're doing it. So it's that connection. It's an energetic connection. And the only way that you're going to get it, in my perspective, is if you go along with them. I don't have the ability to do it without the medicine. I couldn't do it. And sometimes I'm so exhausted that if I didn't have the medicine going with me, there's no way I could have done it. So there you have it. Yeah. For me, anyway, that's my perspective.
Yeah, well, that's great. That's definitely, I can get on board with all of that. I really know what you're talking about, you know, having done that myself with people. And I think it's a vital part of really serving people. That it's not an indulgence on the part of the person who's serving, that it's actually a very important function within that space of, because people do come with difficult energies and sometimes they do need that just the right touch or the right word or just the right presence, and consuming the medicine with them allows for that to take place at an immediate intuitive level where you don't need to know what's going on. Right? Because you're just, you're feeling it. You're part of it.
Yeah. You're just flowing with it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And in fact, I tell them, and it makes people come more at ease because they think, well, if he's smoking with me, that's going to be okay. Right?
Yeah.
I get that a lot as well. Oh, you're smoking with me too. Then, oh, I feel so much better. Okay. I'll do it.
Yeah. So you mentioned, you know, the potential of people putting you and your wife on a pedestal. I'm just curious, you know, like in running a retreat center, do you ever get people who just won't leave? They just want to be there.
Yes, we get that. We also get people who, I don't know how to say it in a good way. It's just, they're just leeches. You know, they just want to hold on and they want to absorb as much as they can from you. I think that's in any industry, right? You're going to have that. So,
yeah.
You know, and we don't run a retreat center. We just go to retreat centers. So we have some very good friends that we've developed who have retreat centers. And I told them, you know, thank you so much for owning these centers because I don't want one. Literally, I just want to come, serve the medicine, help the people. And then I need to go back home and go back to work and do my life, you know, because this can literally consume you.
Yeah.
It can literally consume you.
Yeah. Well, that's nice to have that option to be able to leave and to go home and to not have it be 24/7. Because especially it sounds like you have a lot of passion for it. And, you know, we want to take care of Juan David too, not just everybody else. You know, that's part of the role of being a facilitator is you also have to care for yourself and you have to care for your own boundaries. You have to care for your own health and your own well-being and your own family.
Absolutely.
Sometimes that means stepping away from the work and not being available all the time, every day, which sometimes, like you say, that sometimes people, they can develop sort of that needy energy of, oh, I need you to help me all the time and I need to be around you and I need to be around the work and, you know, being able to step away. So I'm curious, what is it that you like to do when you're not serving medicine? Like, what do you do just for your own enjoyment in your life?
Oh God, I'm a workaholic. So I mean, right now I'm in the crypto world, you know, I mean that's my thing right now is just for whatever reason, I get a great excitement out of earning money. And right now, that's the easiest way to make money right now is just through the crypto. It's my perspective anyway.
Yeah. So you enjoy doing that?
Yeah. Playing around with it. Used to be very heavy into statistics and, you know, why does this work? Why didn't this work? Because we were in e-commerce. So you're bombarded with data and information and why does this work and why doesn't that work? And this works better. This color works better. This works on and on and on it goes, right? There's just never ending. And from there, just watching movies, hanging out with my kids. I have four kids. I have a 33-year-old son. I have four grandkids. I have a 30-year-old son who's in Hawaii studying medicine. He's studying ayahuasca.
Wow, great.
And I have a 24-year-old daughter. She has Asperger's and she lives with us. And I have a 21-year-old who's in college in California, by the way, in Long Beach.
Hmm.
So they keep me hopping.
Family man.
It's a good life. It's a good life. You know, that's what I tell everybody. You know, if you don't take anything away from this experience, enjoy your life. It's only one you got. You're never coming back as Martin. You're never coming back as Juan David. You're never going to come back. This is it. Enjoy your time. Enjoy your life. Live the best you can as you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is such an important message. So, not to ask you to foretell the future, but do you see yourself as living out the rest of your days in Costa Rica? Is that the place for you, or do you think there might be changes coming? What do you think?
You know, I really love this country. I mean, it energetically, it's very, very, very good. It's just because they never really had any civil wars. So I think the people as a whole are really good energetically. It's a great place to live. Although, you know, I've been here almost 25 years, so it gets a little, I've seen it all. I've been everywhere you can imagine.
And, yeah, it's a small country. Yeah.
There's only like 5 million people here, and I probably have seen half of them. I really like Mexico. I'm not a fan of the U.S. I came from the U.S. I love the people, but I don't want to live there. I still have a father there. My kids are there. I still want more freedom than they offer.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I think if I go anywhere, it'd probably be Mexico. But again, it has its own challenges, right?
Yeah.
And then I think, well, am I going to serve medicine for the rest of my life? I don't know that either. Because I've had 2 cervical discs removed from my neck. I've had 2 lumbar discs removed in my lumbar. I have an artificial knee. So, I mean, it's not like I'm a young guy that can do this forever. I know that. And so, because Bufo is it's a lot of work. I mean, if you're giving the people a full on, you're working. I mean, physically working. It's a lot of work.
Definitely.
And you can get hurt. And so I know that there's going to be a point where I got to step back. But I don't want to give it up either. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like
we'll see where the universe leads me.
Yeah. It sounds like it's going well for now. So might as well continue
all
on.
Good.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, it's been really wonderful talking to you today, Juan David. Is there anything else that you'd like to mention or cover that we haven't talked about so far in our conversation?
You know, we've covered the majority of it. I'd love to come back with you at another time when you have time, and we can do it again, and we can pick out a particular subject that is of interest, and we can just rip it apart. That'd be fantastic. I'd love that.
Okay, great. And I don't know if you want to give out your contact information. It sounds like you're already busy enough.
I don't. Thank you so much. I mean, infinitely, you're blessed for that. Thank you. But I'm overloaded as I am.
Right on. I can appreciate that. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Juan David. It's been really nice to sit here and see you and hear your wisdom from your experience. And it's been a pleasure to get to know you. And I'm glad we've had this opportunity.
Me too. It's been an honor. It's an honor. Thank you. Okay. And have a spectacular weekend.
All right. Thank
you. Or week, rather. All right.
Sure.
Take care.